You're listening to Well Made, a podcast from Lumi about the future of e-commerce. I'm your host, Stefan Ango. Rachel Drury.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
So you're the founder of Daily Harvest. I usually try to like encapsulate my understanding of the business first, and then you can tell me if I got that right. So you started with cups of frozen fruits that are ready to blend into smoothies and sold those through your e-commerce website, Daily Harvest, and have pretty rapidly grown into a full stable of frozen foods that are really easy to make and kind of deliver something really delicious in a way that is quick to put together and also nutritious.
Right.
I hope I did it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, fair.
How do you describe it?
Yeah, so we did start with ready to blend smoothies, but the concept was always much bigger than that. So really what Daily Harvest is out there, or what we are out there to achieve, is to solve what I like to think of as a modern eating dilemma. What that means is that, you know, if you ask anybody that you know, if they are busy, they will probably say yes. And then if you ask them, does that get in the way of what they hope to be eating, how they hope to be able to care for themselves in the world of health and wellness and nutrition, they will also say yes. So there's this modern eating dilemma where we have more information than ever before about health and wellness and what we should be eating and what we should be doing. But the ironic part is that we have less and less time to actually execute on those aspirations. So Daily Harvest was really developed as a solve to this problem. Why couldn't there be, because there is now, a health and wellness solution that doesn't require any nutritional compromise, but is also very convenient in nature. And that's really what Daily Harvest is. We use the freezer as the vehicle to be able to solve this problem.
It's interesting to me that going to your website, you have a pretty, partisan like approach to the freezer, maybe having like a bad reputation or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Walk me through that.
Yeah, so people associate frozen food with things like dinosaur-shaped chicken nuggets and, you know, frozen pizza. And that's because that's what's currently in frozen. So, you know, frozen food kind of evolved in a really interesting time in our history. It was during the mass industrialization of food. And it was also when people wanted to care for their family in a certain way. And they were also looking for a lot of the solutions that people are looking for today, like, you know, a way to serve their families or serve themselves in a really convenient format. Because, hey, there are always other things that you could be doing with your time. But what's interesting about frozen versus the other markets within grocery or consumer in general is that it's failed to evolve past that time. So, you know, in the 1950s, the food industry got together and was like, hey, let's develop something that's frozen and like space food, and allow these Leave It to Beaver mothers to get out of the kitchen for a little bit, you know, and feed their families and sit in front of the television and eating dinner in front of their televisions in the most unmindful way possible. So, you know, we do take a stand on, hey, frozen can be something so different, because in history, it actually was. You know, before the industrialization of food and before the microwave dinner, frozen was actually used as the most natural, perfect way to air quote, preserve food without and adulterating it in any fashion. But then the 50s, 60s happened and we are where we are. So we're really taking it back and we're producing, you know, the foods that I personally aspire to eat, that, you know, we believe our target demographic aspires to eat. And that is unrefined, unprocessed, whole, real foods. You open one of our cups, you can actually see the ingredients inside. There's nowhere to hide anything. We don't want to hide anything. And there's something really powerful to that.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that everybody is on board when you say, you know, like, can I eat something more healthy quicker?
Right.
you know, at a good price. Like, I think that that is an equation that everybody's on board with. And, you know, for my part, I'm an inveterate like meal prepper. I'm always thinking way ahead of time of here's what I'm going to eat for the week ahead, because I never want to get into, especially lunch is for me the craziest because it's always so busy and I feel like I have 20 minutes to eat at most. And so I usually tend to make a big pot of something over the weekend and really try to like spend that time, like hours on the weekend, making something really good so that I don't have to spend time thinking about it or anything during the week. But I have to admit that the freezer is not something that I use very much. And I think it's probably like a misconception that I have around like the freshness of the ingredients, or, you know, is the nutrition going to get lost when you freeze it? Right. And reading on your website, it seemed like there's some science behind that points the other way.
Absolutely. So what I found when I started researching the business and the opportunity, you know, after realizing that the freezer kind of solved my health and wellness dilemma, is the more I read, the more I uncovered that frozen produce, when it's picked at its peak nutrition, which is how frozen has to be picked because, hey, it doesn't have time to ripen at any other point. When it's frozen on the farm, it's actually higher in nutrient content than a lot of the stuff that you buy in the grocery store. So the stuff you buy in the grocery store, some of the apples that you consume, for example, can be up to a year and a half old. Like if you just think about the nutrient profile of the apple that's coming straight from the tree and what that looks like versus an apple that's a year and a half old. By the time you're consuming that apple that's been, you know, that took a long journey to get to the grocery store to begin with, was probably, you know, warehoused in some gas chamber for, you know, however long, you know, stuff that you get at the farmer's market is a different story. Stuff that you get, you can't beat, you know, the blueberries that are picked 24 hours ago, you know, and fresh from the farmer's market. But, you know, 90% of Americans don't have access to that. And even for the 10% who do have access, the reality of being able to eat everything fresh from the farmer's market, the prep that involves, the commitment that involves, it's pretty unrealistic for most people.
Yeah, it's interesting that I don't know if there's been innovations in flash freezing. It seems like it. I was recently reading an article about sushi and fish, which is, it seems like in the world of sushi, 99% of what you're going to eat has been frozen at some point, even if it doesn't seem like it when you're in the restaurant. And so it does seem like there's been a lot of innovation in that area that somehow hasn't made it to the consumer's mind yet.
Yeah, I mean, the basics are still true from, you know, the way that Bird's Eye Foods decided, hey, we should start IQF, which is individually quick freezing, you know, using nitrogen tunnels to quick freeze fruits and vegetables at their highest nutritional peak. You know, that idea is not new. But what we can do now with supply chain is, you know, we can guarantee that the time from something being picked to the time it is actually you know, frozen is shorter and shorter. And that's the time that matters. Once it's frozen, the nutrients are kind of locked in there. But it's really about the time it takes to get from the farm to the freezer. And that's something where there's been, you know, a lot of innovation.
Yeah. Actually, tell me a little bit about, describe how the products are packaged, because I feel like that is part of the innovation as well. You know, actually making it, first of all, individualized cups for the smoothies, for example, but you've also got the overnight oats and the soups. You've kind of found a pretty good formula in each of the different verticals or areas that you've focused on to make something that is individual yet really easy to put together. And then obviously it's delivered via e-commerce, via trucks that come to your home. Right. So clearly, and this is something that we interact with at Lumi a lot lately. We've had a lot of food companies coming to us for packaging and thinking about how do you keep the cold storage chain going all the way to someone's house.
Yeah, well, it's certainly not easy. I can say that, you know, but there's a lot of trial and error that we had to endure you know, in the beginning, just to make sure that we were thinking about, you know, transit time and the cold chain appropriately, because, you know, really you lose your control once you use a third party delivery carrier, right? So, you know, you're kind of sending it off to somebody, hoping that they care as much as you do. Obviously, we use partners that, you know, we believe do care as much as we do. But, you know, you can't control if a truck breaks down. You can't control if there are too many deliveries scheduled for one day and, you know, your delivery gets delayed. So there are a lot of things that are out of your control, which we thought about just as much as the things that were in our control.
Yeah. So when you were saying that there's some innovations that have happened in the supply chain world, it sounds like some of those things are what are enabling your business. Why didn't this business exist, you know, 10 years ago or 20 years ago? Is it because of some of those innovations, or is it something else about people's mindset changing?
I think it's a mindset change more than anything. We absolutely could have done this business, you know, years ago, but I just don't think that it would have taken off. People have now become accustomed to purchasing food and all sorts of consumer goods, you know, on the internet and then getting them delivered to their door. And it's become a commonplace practice. Whereas, you know, years ago, it seemed alien.
Yeah. It also helps that everything that you're making is so beautiful. you go to the Instagram profile for Daily Harvest and it's just like, wow. It makes me feel like I'm definitely not eating healthy enough.
Yeah. I mean, look, I say to my team all the time, does it make you want to eat it? Because if it doesn't, then it shouldn't be up.
So what was your entryway into this? How did you decide to get involved in this?
So Daily Harvest really came from personal need, and it's as basic as that. I was working at Gilt Group, actually, and have built my career in marketing and branding and business development, those sort of functions, and found that, you know, the busier my work day got, the more health compromise I was making. And then one day I just decided that I wanted to make a change and that, you know, I had to do something about it. So I started meal prepping, and, you know, what better way to do that than to put things in the freezer, because then you're not meal prepping for, you know, a day or two ahead. You're meal prepping for, you know, weeks and months ahead. And I also am somebody who fatigues really quickly from the things that I'm eating. Like, I want to be eating something different every day. So by freezing things, I was also able to have more variety, because I could make, you know, one thing one week, another thing another week, and then have some, you know, have things in the freezer so that I could pick and choose, you know. And for me, it was such a life-changing moment when I realized that I actually was able to eat the way that I aspired to. I just needed to plan ahead. And then I was like, wait a minute, why isn't somebody doing this for me? Like, this is taking a lot of time. As you mentioned, you know, it takes a lot of your weekend. It takes a lot of your mind and brain power. And if you think about what else you could be doing with that time that it takes to prep, there are probably a lot of things that you could think of, and most people can. So when I started meal prepping, it immediately changed the way that I was eating. But for me, the real moment where I decided, like, hey, this is going to be a thing, was when my husband, who, you know, is definitely not super gifted in the culinary arts, was able to, you know, grab a bag out of the freezer, blend a smoothie in the morning. It was something that he felt really good about, something that I felt really good about, you know, and get out the door. That's the moment where I said, okay, this is a thing. This is, you know, I need to do this for other people, because it's solving my problem. It's solving a problem my husband's having. There must be more of us out there.
Yeah, the food fatigue thing is one that is particularly funny, because I think, at least around the Lumi office, I'm like known as the person who eats the same lunch for like 3 months straight, like literally exactly the same thing, because I'll just get into a zone and I'm like, I don't have time to think about coming up with other recipes. I'm just going to, you know, especially for the things that I try to make ahead of time. So I could definitely use a little more variety. But yep. When it came time to actually like start a company, how did you make that transition between your time at Guilt Group and then, you know, starting something brand new, that had to be a challenge?
Yeah. So just in general, I've always been pretty into health and wellness. I was actually a rower growing up, and you know, having that athletic background, just knowing what I need to be eating, what I should not be eating to be able to fuel my body efficiently, I think played a big role in, you know, how I had some thoughts around what I wanted to be doing nutritionally for the people that Daily Harvest would be catering to. And then, you know, I'm just kind of the person that dives into things head first. So, you know, I got really excited about the opportunity. I started doing research. I realized that, you know, not only is this solving a problem, but hey, it's actually a better way to eat. It's new, you know, there's nutritional benefit to this, you know, and hey, if there's a story that there is to tell, I have a marketing background, I'm going to know how to shout it from the rooftop. So, you know, I decided to try, and I started looking around for commercial kitchens. I got myself a commercial kitchen in Long Island City and started making smoothie packs. So, you know, with my right hand and my left hand, employee number one and employee number two, started bagging everything up, delivering it in my car, and set a metric for myself, which was basically once there were five times more people who I didn't know ordering than those who I did, then it was time to go whole hog. And that's exactly what I did.
It seems like from the get-go, you knew or you had an inkling that this could be a really big idea. From what I read, you started in 2014, so like 2.5 years ago. And is this correct? You have 100,000 subscribers today?
Yep.
So like that is, I mean, that's pretty crazy. Like 2 years, one and a half years to get to that scale is got to be, I mean, did you think it could get that big that quickly?
Oh yeah, I think it can get a lot bigger.
So what gave you that level of faith in the idea?
You know, I think when you solve a problem that's so obvious and you do it in a way that's really genuine, that, you know, the opportunity is there, right? So, you know, we pinpointed a problem, we figured out how to solve it. Our food is delicious. You know, we're very, you know, targeted in the problem that we're trying to solve and who we're trying to solve it for. And with all of that, you know, there's a big business opportunity.
How did you go about finding the people who would help you in all the areas that you weren't as familiar with? You know, we talked a little bit about all the logistical challenges. That wasn't really your background. How did you put that team together?
You know, again, a lot of it was trial and error. I didn't necessarily find the right team right away. Absolutely not. But, you know, what I did do is I hired people who were just good people, you know, all around athletes who I knew could wear multiple hats and, you know, get whatever needed to be done. And that's really who initially I grew the business with. It was people who were just passionate about the idea and, you know, I could sick after any opportunity and they would execute flawlessly. So, you know, nobody was necessarily an expert in operations or nobody was an expert in anything in particular.
It's interesting. So the people that you brought on, you had to have them presumably like source fruits, bring them to like you've I'm sure expanded past the little commercial kitchen that you put together a couple years ago. Talk to me about that transition. Like give me an idea of the different phases in terms of scaling the actual production of everything that you make.
Yeah, I mean, everything has just been so iterative, and that's, you know, in my mind, the way to do things. I'm a big believer in being resourceful and being scrappy. Maybe sometimes scrappy to a fault, but, you know, I really believe in proving the need to do something before you actually do it. So, you know, our operations have definitely scaled slowly and iteratively. So starting out in a facility that, you know, made sense at the time and, you know, a commercial kitchen, and then, you know, moving to larger and, more scalable solutions as time went on and as the opportunity really presented itself and became clear.
For the 100,000 subscribers that you have, what are they, like, on average, how many cups are they getting per month or per year, would you say? Or how do you measure that?
Yeah, I mean, so we have 4 different box sizes. We have a 6-box, a 9-box, a 12-box, and a 24-box. And it really runs the gamut. It's very interesting to see, but it's pretty evenly dispersed.
And so each one of those is one meal, essentially, right? Or like a small
meal? Not necessarily. It really depends on what the collection is. So, our smoothies are meant to be either a meal replacement or an addition to, just daily nutrition. And then, our sundaes are meant to be just that, like a sundae, which is a more occasional product. And then, the harvest bowls that we just launched are definitely made to be something that you could consume every single day. Speaking about like food fatigue and wanting something different, you can actually customize them every single time that you make them and, add a protein and stir fry it or use it as a side dish, or you can just have it as an amazing vegan snack. And there's really, no end to what can be done with them.
That part alone is just like the customization is really hard to do just at scale. Did you guys use a third-party logistics firm for that, or are you guys doing it all in-house?
No, we do everything in-house. And, again, it's trial and error. So we just are constantly talking to our customers. We're constantly seeking feedback. We're constantly looking at data and just trying to optimize.
One thing that I noticed in reading the backstory is you've brought on some pretty big names to the list of investors. There's a few celebrities there, like Serena Williams and Bobby Flay, Sean White. What do you think they bring to the table? Like, how do you use them as their investors? But are they advisors? Or is it mostly about them, enjoying the product and sharing it with their audience? How do you think about that?
Well, it's actually really interesting. I think people see those names and they assume that it's some sort of marketing opportunity, and it's just not that. So, Serena Williams, for example, was introduced to me through her fiance, now husband, and, they were fans. They were consuming Daily Harvest in the morning and wanted to get in touch to see if there was an investment opportunity. Similar story with Gwyneth Paltrow and Bobby Flay, and really all of these relationships have been extremely organic. So having people who are passionate about what we do has been really exciting. And, not only do they believe in the concept, but they're also willing to put their money where their mouth is, which, I'm really proud to have these investments and to have them as part of our team and figuring out, how they can help our customers.
Another thing I notice is, and I don't know if this was intentional or not, but it seems like currently you have more of a female audience. Is that something that you designed that way, or was that accidental? Is that something that in the future you want to change or launch other brands that suit more different kinds of audiences?
Well, I'd say that it charts really closely to who holds the purchasing power, or not the purchasing power, but who makes purchasing decisions
right. In
our country. So, females 25 to 40, that's who makes purchasing decisions, for households, for, couples usually. And that's who our core customer is. And I don't think it's surprising. And I don't think that it's anything that was extremely deliberate. It's just, it makes sense with the way that people purchase.
I wonder if, and maybe you have some data on this, if you actually make the difference between who's actually consuming the food versus who's buying it. It'd be interesting to see that the distinction between those two.
Yeah. And that's something we're researching right now, because when we talk to our members, what we hear constantly is, it's the kid, it's the, child in the family or the husband or whomever it is that are just such avid fans. It's not always the person who's making the purchase, although oftentimes it's both.
Yeah, we've found that quite a lot, actually, with some of the people that have been on Well Made so far. I could think of a few that come to mind. Another one in the food world, which is dog food, actually, is the company Ollie that delivers like fresh dog food. And obviously, dogs are not on Instagram or on the internet reading about what foods they should get. But when you have to sort of market to an audience, but then the consumer might be a little bit different or associated with that audience, it poses some interesting challenges. But I think I personally feel like I think guys should be following you because they
have a huge male audience.
Yeah.
It's just they're not always the ones, you know, putting the credit card on in the account.
So how did you think about, you mentioned that you had a branding and marketing background. How did you think about building the brand and the look and feel of it? You have this really minimalistic, like, you know, black and white, right. Pretty simple packaging and branding. The colors of the fruits and vegetables and everything really pop. Have you gone through multiple iterations of that over time?
I mean, the brand that we launched with wasn't really a brand at all. It was an MVP, like, let's just throw something on the cups and see what happens. That was when we were in a commercial kitchen, you know, but being somebody who is always thinking brand and customer experience first, I knew that in order for Daily Harvest to be truly successful, it had to not only be different inside the cup, but the cups themselves and the packaging had to feel different and elevated and not look like all of the noise that's out there in grocery right now. So, that's what we did. And I do believe it looks differentiated. There are a lot of people now copying us, but that's okay. It's flattery. and I think that people are just sick of clutter.
Yeah. Last year we had some interesting stuff happen in the e-commerce food world with, you know, Blue Apron going public and then Amazon buying Whole Foods. How do you think about that as a, you know, bigger, I mean, not that they're necessarily competing with you, but just what's going on in the food internet market?
Yeah, I mean, I think that there's a lot happening, and I do think that our business model is certainly differentiated from a lot of what's going on with some of the companies that you mentioned. But, you know, I think it's interesting. I think that a lot of the CPG companies are kind of figuring out how they compete in this new world. I think, you know, companies like Blue Apron and Plated are kind of recalibrating and trying to, you know, focus on the core metrics of their business. And, you know, it's something that, we have the benefit of, you know, kind of seeing from the outside and have been able to build our business, you know, with all of this in mind.
There's a lot of food education that's happening now in America that hasn't happened before, like,
right.
That I find fascinating. On the other hand, that education is sometimes maybe, like, how do you, I don't want to get into fake news or something like that, but like, how do you parse that? How do we help make sure that, like, customers are being properly educated and not receiving poor information.
Right. So I think that what you're speaking to is just the noise out there where, you know, there are some people who have an actual degree who are saying things, but then there are people who, are using things that culturally are functional foods for different reasons. And they're not necessarily doctors, but they're experts in things like Ayurveda and just different styles of functional eating that are based in traditional cultures. It's really interesting to see that, you know, anybody can be a health and wellness expert today. You know, what I say is I think that there's like a critical mass of information out there that we've basically achieved where people just start to fatigue of it. And they're just going to start like looking for things that aren't so exhausting. The like brand of health and wellness that we really believe in is pretty basic. And it's like, hey, if you consume more fruits and vegetables, you know, you're winning for the day. And the idea is that, like, you know, there's never going to be a diet or a trend or anything like that that is counter to that simple statement. And that's really what we believe people need today and need in this world. It's just like a simple plan that isn't based in any science or pseudoscience that, you know, has been proven to work. And that's eat more plants.
Yeah, I think that's a good message, because if you it seems like you read the news and every day someone seems to be disagreeing on the pros or cons of eating coffee or chocolate or eggs or whatever it is. Or, you know, I live in the capital of food fads. I think LA has pretty much a restaurant for every diet that you can imagine.
Totally.
And parsing that can be pretty challenging, especially for people who are busy and don't have time to think too much about exactly what they're consuming.
Right. And, you know, I just really continue to think about, what somebody who we're really catering, our business towards is looking for. And it's not more information. It's not, I mean, you know, they're very educated, but it's not like more noise. It's really a simple plan that, you know, lives up to the whole like convenience mantra.
Yeah. I mean, historically, convenience, fast food, we think of McDonald's, Coca-Cola. I think the world is moving on from that, and those big conglomerates are trying to evolve themselves out of that mode towards something more of wellness. And one of the themes that you've talked about is democratizing wellness, and yep. That maybe wellness is not, I don't know. You mentioned before we recorded the word bougie, for the lack of a better term, but what did you mean by that?
You know, really what I meant is that health and wellness has become so precious that it's almost become something that is a show of wealth and a show of privilege. And I think that that's just a really big shame.
Yeah.
You know, when you look on Instagram or whatever it is and you're like, oh, that food looks amazing. I wish I had time to eat that. But hey, you know, I've got two jobs and I've got a kid to put through school. Like, that's just not reality for me. Or hey, where would I buy something like this? I live in, you know, the middle of a suburban area in the middle of you know, nowhere. And there just aren't options. Like, I can't buy these ingredients, but like, you know, good for you that you can eat that way. You know, one of the things that we're really excited about is the accessibility of, to one of your points before, being able to reach people who don't have, you know, the access to food that you and I do in New York and LA, you know, and to be able to provide them with things that are really exciting and things that they really, you know, aspire to eat.
Can you, one question that we haven't addressed is what's the price point of Daily Harvest?
Yeah. So, it depends on how many you purchase, but they start at $6.99. And, you know, if you think about what you're getting for that price, right, you're getting whole, unrefined, unprocessed, organic food. You know, in some areas of the country, that might seem like a lot, but, you know, in some areas it's actually like a bargain. I know here in New York, it certainly is, you know, but in the middle of the country, if you really think about, you know, the value prop, it's more than, you know, it's never going to be about price for us. It's really like, are these the foods that you want to be eating? And, you know, we're giving you access to them.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely a believer in the fact that, everything when it comes to the environment and sustainability has a cost, whether or not we're paying for it, or, you know, future generations or animals or something is paying for it.
Right.
And so it definitely feels like we should be paying more for our food in a weird way, because hopefully that would help it be made in more ethical ways. So I'm definitely on board with that. And it feels like the products that you sell are premium in the sense that they're made organically and so on.
They are. Sorry, we're doing all sorts of things that, you know, are just more than meets the eye. So, for example, when we were launching our ice cream, you know, there are these incredible toasted hazelnuts in our like hazelnut almond, I think it's called chocolate hazelnut, nice cream sundae. And I mean, it tastes like Nutella, and you can't even begin to make that at home unless you have access to the best hazelnuts, because it just doesn't make that, it just doesn't taste right. like that. So, you know, we went to probably 40 different farmers and had them all send us their nuts, and, you know, I know, wanted to like perfectly roast them, and, you know, we're very picky about the ones that we ultimately chose. And that's because, you know, we want to make sure that whatever you're getting from us is the best. And, you know, if you went and bought hazelnuts at your grocery store and tried to create the same exact, you know, nice cream sundae, it just wouldn't taste that way. You know, some of the other things that we're doing is we work with farmers who are aspiring to be organic farmers. So this is actually a big thing that we do, and you know, it costs money. You know, we partner with farmers who have said, hey, you know, I'm conventional today, but I'd love to move over to organic farming. That takes 3 years. And usually those farmers go without an income for 3 years. Like, if you just think about how hard that could be on somebody and somebody's ability to feed themselves and to feed their family, like, that's a huge commitment. So we actually work with transitional organic farmers, and we invest in their transitional crops because we think that it's important to do that, where over time we are increasing the pool of what's available organically overall, and we hope that that drives down the pricing of organic.
Yeah, that's a big thing, and you know, in general, when it comes to bring the price points down, you know, that's what it's going to take, because it's impossible for everyone to eat everything organic today. It's just not, because there isn't enough of it out there.
Right.
When it comes to, you know, continuing to build the business, like, what are the things that you turn to for inspiration or mentors, or when you think about, it sounds like you have a very ambitious idea of where Daily Harvest can go. What are the things that are helping you keep your mind open to the big picture and solving the challenges that you're dealing with?
I'd really say that, you know, it's our customers, it's our members, it's people who, you know, write in and they're like, wow, I didn't even realize that I could eat conveniently without nutritional compromise. Like, this has changed my life. You've made, you know, all of my, like, you know, you've made it possible for me to reach my aspirational eating goals. And, you know, that's a huge motivator. But I'd also say that, you know, just talking to these people and understanding what they're missing, what we're not doing, you know, what they like, what they don't like, and having a constant dialogue is a big part of what we do.
Well, it's really inspiring to see you build this. And if people want to find out more about it, they can go to daily-harvest.com. Is there anything else you want to point them to? Instagram is pretty great.
Instagram.
If you want to get a daily dose of some beautiful fruits and vegetables to remind you to eat well.
Yeah, no, I think those two places sound wonderful.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Rachel.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed the show, if you got something useful out of it, I would love to hear what that was. Consider writing a short review, could be just a sentence long, by going to iTunes and searching for Well Made. I want to hear it all. I want to hear good, bad. I want to hear your constructive criticisms. I am just trying to make this show as useful as possible for you. So tell us what you think. That is the very best way that you can support the show. Thanks, and see you next time.